Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Christina Suter. Hi, Christina.
Yes, Christina Suter. Good job. Woohoo.
Hopefully I pronounced it the right way.
I pronounced it perfectly. Yes. A lot of people, it's, you know, I always have to say my husband was a good suitor. Oh. Even though it's not spelled that way, it's pronounced that way. But thank you, Mike, for having me on the show. I so appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. Appreciate you coming. We met at a conference just about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And immediately connected, and your brilliance was just so awesome. I thought you'd be an awesome guest to come and talk about real estate. And you hail from Pasadena, California. Tell us a little bit about you and your family, just a couple of words on that front, and then we'll go into business questions.
Sure, absolutely. So I actually grew up in San Gabriel, which is just two cities away from Pasadena. I met my husband dancing West Coast Swing. I knew I was in trouble when the first time we started dancing together, but it did take him 3 years before we actually started dating. So I got to praise his determination. And then we have a 14-year-old daughter, and I moved into his house in Pasadena. So
that's wonderful. I've heard this story before. Some men are shy, and it takes them a little while to ask somebody out. But
no. It wasn't his fault. Nope. It was my fault. Absolutely. I completely take the blame for that. He invited me out to lunch and at a dance event. And I kind of went, who is this strange dude? He's bright. He's intelligent. He's kind of nerdy. He's an introvert. But then I stayed dated somebody else for 3 years.
Well, you know, it takes a while. Sometimes it takes a while to discover. And this is I'm not an expert in the field. So we'll leave the conversation about how people get together, how they date, et cetera, for another time. Let's talk a little bit about your professional background and expertise as a real estate coach, as a consultant, as a wealth manager. Tell folks a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So I started investing when I was 17. A lot of people know my story, but I'll repeat it anyways. My mom was in poor health. I grew up in San Gabriel, like I just mentioned, and we used to have third degree smog alerts. Think of a snow day, but a smog day. For those people who grew up in snow country, we loved smog days because they were like snow days. You didn't go to school, but you had to stay inside because the air quality outside was so bad that you couldn't breathe. My mom had asthma, and so she called the three of us kids. I'm the youngest of three. She called the three of us kids and said, hey, I got to move. I can't. She was going to the hospital because her asthma would be so bad on smog days. I'm moving. And I said, okay, I'll take care of the house, Mom. No problem. Just go. You need to go. Just go. Not a problem. And she said, okay, here. And she literally titled it over to me. And all of a sudden I owned a house. And I was a freshman in college or heading into college. And I owned a house and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. All I knew is that I now had this house so that my mother could leave town and go up to Northern California, which is where she ended up doing. I rented out to my aunt and uncle. I call my aunt and uncle, but really they're my godparents. They bought it from me on an installment sale, having something to do with Social Security and not wanting to realize too much of this or that. And I didn't know at the time I was 17, 18, 19 years old, but they bought it from me. I bought a condo for my brother. I rented out Section 8. I bought the next house my mom actually moved into. Those ended up appreciating. This little town of Healdsburg, which was completely unknown at the time, appreciated by threefold in the amount of time that I owned it. And all of a sudden I was selling in the year of 2000, 2001, I was selling that house along with some other assets that I had accumulated. And I had over $1 million worth of equity. And I'm like, I'm okay. Compounding works for you. And I still had never taken it seriously. In that time, I worked as a receptionist. I worked as a teacher. I worked as a child care provider. I worked as an infant room head teacher. I worked in special ed. I got my teacher's credential. And I had now doubled back to get my master's in psychology. So I have a bachelor's in business, a teacher's credential, and a master's in psychology. And the reason why I describe all of that, because it kind of flows together. to describe that in 2000, I started getting serious. Like, I should really become knowledgeable in being a real estate investor because I could either take all this money and pour it into stocks, which I had started investing in stocks when I was 12, another story for another day, or I could pour it into real estate. And I chose real estate. And so I started getting educated intentionally and consciously on what it meant to be in real estate as a professional investor. And since then, I've owned 50 doors of my own, 300 doors I shared with other people. I've owned in seven different states, single families, fourplexes, multifamilies in multiple different places. I have flipped and rehabbed houses, done condo conversion and lot splits. So I've worked in a variety of different ways, including hard money loans. So I have this diverse background in real estate investing. And I also was a small business management consultant. And my advisor said to me in 2007, as the market was slipping and life was all, pick your swear word, the market was slipping. He said, why don't you become a real estate investment advisor, just like you advise people on small business management consulting, but just inside the asset of real estate? And I went, I can't be responsible for other people's money. And then a week later, I went, yes, I can be responsible for other people's money. Actually, I can. At that point, since I've been doing it since I was 17, I've been doing it for since 1986, 1987. So I had been doing it for quite some time in my own portfolio, slowly but surely, doing Section 8, doing some rentals, doing some flips, doing some little things here and there, and getting more and more professionalized and educated. And that's when I realized that because I love consulting, I loved that work with my master's in psychology, my bachelor's in business, and my teacher's credential. Being a wealth coach is the combination of what does it mean to be knowledgeable about what's in your way between you fulfilling your life's purpose and how does wealth grow? How do you steward your relationship with wealth and create a successful portfolio that will compound what the way you want it to, because you apply your attention to it and your intention.
I appreciate that amazing journey. It is a journey. It's
It is a journey.
how you grew over the years into the role that you do today. So how do you mix being a professional investor and being I guess a consultant, a real estate investment advisor? How do you mix it both? Because you have your own projects, your own investments, and you have your clients that have capital and they're coming to you with their life goals and aspirations.
So, well, let me also ask why I bother to mix it. So, how I mix it is that I'm a mom, my daughter's 14. So, I work from 9 to 2, 4 days a week, because I am a mom. The reason why I continue to steward my financial freedom through my real estate wealth is so I could be a mom. That was my why. That was my goal. And it was almost unknown to me until I hit about 34. And then I'm like, no, I've been working in childcare. I've been working in teaching. I've been working in all of these childlike environments, these psychology environments, because I wanted to be a mom. And I finally owned that. And I got married and I was lucky. I had one kid. I was 40 when I gave birth. So I was lucky I got one, but I did get one. And so my why I have financial freedom is so I could be a mom. So I work from 9 to 2, Monday through Thursday, Friday being my day of trying to sort of have like my spillover day, just keep it open so I can do other projects. And in that 9 to 2, I do my consulting work. Why I do my consulting work is because it's satisfying to me. Real estate's fun. Real estate's great. I love investing in real estate. I like my tenants. I love engaging with my property managers. I love the process of buying an asset of real estate. I love looking at real estate. I love rehabbing real estate. Like, I love some of those pieces, although the larger rehabs I'm not doing anymore. But buying, right? Real estate, buying it to rent, I'll do that all day long now. But the real heart, the real passion that I have is about people understanding how to develop their financial freedom and their leadership. That inner metal it takes to be a leader in your life, in good and bad, is only developed through the consulting work. That's how I help people explore, discover, confirm, expand, commit, and create financial leadership in their lives for themselves so they can live the life that they know they can live if they choose it.
So how do you do this? How do you get them to take ownership and leadership in their own financial journey? And I don't know, do you work mostly with women or you work with some men too? I'm just curious because traditional model, the old model used to be the men were financial leaders of the households. In the new days, a lot of women are more successful than men. And whatever professional career they have, they also need to learn to take the ownership and leadership in the financial success of the family. So I'd just love to hear your thoughts. Is there any difference between men and women? And how do you get them to get comfortable and to take ownership and leadership?
Great questions. Yes, I think I have a disproportionate amount of females in my practice as far as clients. If you look at the real estate field in general, if you go to a real estate conference, which you and I go to and how we met.
It's a 90-10 ratio, 90%.
It's a 90-10 ratio. It's slowly, it's becoming 80-20. I count at almost every conference now because I've noticed it's changing. So I'm counting because I'm tracking the change. But I would say my practice is 50-50, 60%, 50% women, 50% men, 60% women, 40% men. My message is very distinctly, I think, feminine in what it means to truly have a diverse life with multiple focuses in it, which include having a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment. I think for men, they relate to the concept of financial leadership because they relate to the who they want to be. I think men and women both now, it used to be more men than I think women, but now I think it's both. They want to step forward in their lives and claim their space in what it is that they're doing. Men want to create a kingdom, a wealth, a area that they have mastery in, that they have competency in, and they gain some of their self-confidence through knowing that they've created competency in their world, in their team, in their field, in their knowledge base. So that part of my message, I think, appeals to men. So those are the men who come to me who go, hey, look, I want to provide for my family. I've got a wife and I've got five kids I want to send to college and I still need a really good plan to work that out. And I'm like, great, that's what we're going to do. We're going to create an investor profile. We're going to create a strategic plan. We're going to create an allotment schedule. And then I'm going to quarterback you with your team in implementing what we've just created so you can get five kids through college, right? So that's what men come to me for. I think women come to me more for the understanding of leadership, financial leadership. I was told I wasn't good at money. I was told that I was better at art. I was told I don't know about financial. I'm like, dude, or dudette in that case. Financial leadership is a choice for you to be willing to make a decision and be right or wrong. It's a choice about knowing what your values are so that you can implement those values through your investing and through your life so that you're getting to where you want to go. So the conversation is based, the conversation is based in those elements, right?
Yeah, it makes sense. You're speaking the language that men understand versus women, and you're also getting in that comfort zone. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, there is a difference in conversations between what drives a typical male and what drives a typical female. Some females really relate to the conversation now of being able to have a realm, have a purpose, and have a job that they're fulfilling on the planet, and their languaging is becoming more masculine in that way. And some men are more like, I don't really trust myself as a leader. And so it does change, but there is a shifting of knowing where their conversation is inside of them to support the strengths so that leadership comes out of their strengths, comes out of their passion and their natural talents.
Yeah, that's very powerful. It's a great function. It's a great role that you fulfill. And these, of course, are stereotypical conversations, and I'm sure there's some men that act without any leadership, without any strength. They are the opposite of a strong character. And then the reverse happens with women. They're very strong women and they want to lead from the very beginning. You don't need to tell them how to do it because there's natural talent there. So let me ask the next question. What are the common reservations that some people have about engaging with you in, as a real estate consultant, and how do you address these concerns?
Okay. So, common res the biggest, I think, reservation is it's private. People's money is a very private matter. We don't usually talk at general like tea parties or, with the other moms in line or with the other guys at the, at the water cooler, right? About, hey, I just got $3 million invested in a blah blah blah, and it's kicking my ass. And I'm not so, like unless you're in that field, you're not very used to that conversation, and the people around you don't often know that conversation. I think society has different opinions about what money means. Well, if I have $3 million, boy, you must be super wealthy. Well, what's wrong with you that you're complaining that you're super wealthy? And it's like, yeah, $3 million doesn't get you very far if what you want to do is retire and support your family full time and you not working. So $3 million is enough for you to create a job inside of real estate to replace your job that you're doing somewhere else. So I think the concept of wealth isn't really understood on a general level. So I think one of the hesitations is, well, if I tell this lady I've got $3 million or $5 million or $50 million, is she going to respect the conversation? Does she really know what it means to be an asset manager inside of my own life? Is she going to understand? Is she going to say, oh, poor you, you're a rich guy who doesn't have enough money, or a rich gal who's, So it's a very private conversation that requires a very high level of honoring and confidentiality. So that's first. Can I do that? Yes, I can. I have a master's in psychology. I can do that. I can do that really, really well, actually. It's one of the first ground rules I create with my clients is confidentiality, so that they understand that they're safe. Two, will I be and have sound advice? Am I competent? Am I capable of actually offering advice? Do I have a mind that can actually create a strategic plan that is useful? I think that's one of their hesitations. And the third is just the willingness to ask for help. Just the willingness to say, another brain will make me better in my plans. Another brain will move me along faster. The old Einstein statement, you can't solve your problem with the same thinking that got you into the problem. And so you need to be willing to have another brain in there to help you solve what you're just not seeing. It's a little like a silo. You're by yourself. Or it's you and your wife, or you and your husband. And it's like, we don't have an answer. What do we do? So you feel stuck. You have to admit you're stuck.
Yeah, I think these are great objections and great solutions. And everything you mentioned makes a lot of sense. Obviously, privacy and confidentiality in any financial relationship is critical. And that's a first step before you go to the second step and third step. And then ultimately, those of us who come to a decision or conclusion that we need a coach and the truth is that we all need to have a coach, every single one of us. Why? Because whatever phase we are in, if you are in the little league baseball, you need a coach. And if you are a major league player, you need a coach. And if you are the best in the major leagues, you're one of the leading hitters in the world, you still need a coach, just a
Still need
different
coach.
coach. The same is true in investing, and getting a coach is takes a level of courage to actually admit that there's a lot of things I don't know. I need somebody who knows more than I do, who can open my horizons. So everything you said makes great sense. I appreciate that.
If I may hijack for a minute, Mike, one of the times I'm almost the most honored is when I have somebody who has 20 years, 15 years in investing in real estate. Yeah, I've been doing it for 35 years, but they have a lot of years investing in real estate. And they still call me and they go, hey, I just need another head in here. And I am an equal to them. I know they are on par with me. I know they know what I know. I know they have that inner resilience. I know they have that commitment. And I know they have the IQ points. So none of that is missing. What they're looking for is the freedom to spitball, to come up with a better plan than they would come up with alone. And I feel honored that they would include me in that conversation, because that takes a certain amount of like, yeah, I'm an expert, and let me show you my $50 million portfolio, and let me show you what I've done with it, and let me show you why it's not working, and maybe you've got something else in there. That's truly somebody who's interested in mastery. They're truly interested in having a life that works and a real estate portfolio that brings them what they want, if they're willing to do what you just talked about, be humble enough and to truly, yeah.
We all need a sounding board. And even if you're really good and really great and you're a leader of your own company, they say it's lonely on top. So even CEOs need coaches, even the leaders need coaches, just because you need a sounding board. At the end of the day, just like you said, they may have the right idea, the right concept, but just to get the affirmation from you, yeah, it's the right move, or no, it doesn't sound like the right move, that alone is worth quite a bit. So,
Yeah.
a couple more questions, and we are coming to the end. We could keep going. There's a lot of great ideas. We'll probably have to do episode number two.
It's okay with me. I love talking with you, Mike, honestly. I love doing the podcast I did with you, which we just recorded, and it'll be up on my channels here soon as well. And I think that I hope people get to hear you and the wisdom that you have, because I mean, just the solidity that you bring, the awareness that you bring and the thoughtfulness you bring to being able to protect your investors and create sound investments for them and still create a very healthy work environment, which is so important. The people make the investment successful. The people are the ones that protect your investors, and your commitment to that is just was incredibly clear. So I hope people get to listen to it.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. I'm only human and I make mistakes. And I can tell you that I am far from perfect. And I just try to learn from the mistakes. The life is a journey where sometimes you do great, sometimes you make mistakes. You just got to learn and adjust and adapt. And it's an imperfect journey. It's a journey that it's a learning journey. So I have
Well
this
said.
phrase. I have this phrase. It's a question that I ask, and for most investors, and it's very applicable to what you do. And I'll just give you the secret question, and there's no right or wrong answer, but
Sure.
it starts the thought process. So the question goes like this: are you learning to invest, or are you investing to learn? And it's often both. But
Yeah.
as you're making an investment, you better be learning from your own investment, right? And then if you are learning, of course, you're preparing to make the investment that you may not be comfortable. So it's a perpetual journey. And ultimately, what we get out of every move we make, we either get a success or we get experience. It's kind of funny how it works, because
We do.
experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. So at least if you gain experience, you learn some, and then you hopefully do better next time. And if your investment is doing well, it's doing great, you can still learn. It's just life is such that we learn more from mistakes than from successes. Successes reinforce our belief in ourselves and our confidence. The failures are painful and difficult, and but they give us better lessons. So that's my two cents.
Mike, I'm gonna hijack you one more time, if I may.
Go.
So, thank you. So, speaking of being just a human, speaking of being humble, so because I started investing in 1986, I saw the downturn in like the hyperinflation, right? The high interest rates, right? And then the downturn, right? The recession. I owned a condo at the time. Remember, early I owned a house and a condo, right? My mom's house and the condo. And I know the condo went from like 127,000 down to like 85,000, right? Back up again. Sold it for more later. It was Section 8 at the time. But I also lived through the dot-com bust. So in 2000, I watched my stock portfolio lose a good percentage of money. I think it was at least 700,000, 750,000. I lived through the 2009 recession, right? So I was losing 100,000 at one point. I was losing $100,000 a month in that recession. I lost over, I think somewhere between $1.5 million to $2 million worth of net worth in that downturn. Why am I sharing this story? The reason why I am sharing the story is because to trust you to put all of your own money under your own management We want to be leaders in that jurisdiction, in that responsibility. We want to be those leaders. We trust ourselves. And diversification is still a very strong part of being able to have a portfolio that will be through all of these different turns. It takes an inner mettle and an inner commitment to continue to guide the ship through these really tough times, because I've been there. They're really tough. I'm just saying, like, it really hurts, right? And one of the ways you can do that is through syndications. Like intentionally, consciously diversifying my portfolio out of my own bathwater, right? We drink our own bathwater, right? We think we've got it. We think we're so smart. We think we got, like, woo, I'm so smart, I can do it, right? But diversifying away from yourself is actually one of the safety measures inside of a portfolio, because we make our own mistakes. We're human, right? And syndications allow us to do that, to put it in somebody else's hands and trust them to make a good decision. Now, I'm not saying they're always better than we are. We're all just human. But that is part of, I think, the humanity of investing in real estate. And, you know, that's what you guys do. That's what you guys offer, is capacity and access to syndications.
Yeah, I appreciate these great comments. So I'll add a few more quick comments and then ask you how folks get a hold of you and follow up and potentially work with you. So the first comment, of course, I'm a big proponent of diversification. It's a difficult trait. Diversification is not easy because there are many dimensions of diversification. And sometimes you think you're diversified and you're not. But learning fundamental concepts of diversification matter. Diversification has many dimensions, and one of them, diversification in time. It's one of the things that you mentioned, that there are peaks and valleys, and there are periods of time when the market corrects. Diversification in time becomes even more critical. And I wanted to just add this one comment. Funds as syndication is what we do. So for sure, I do feel that investing with folks who have better networks, who have the right connections, they have great expertise, makes a lot of sense. You have to build know, like, and trust, and of course, continue to work with them and see them evolving and continue to evolve with them. And then ultimately, your first point, that you have to become sort of the CEO of your own money. You have to really take ownership and don't abdicate your portfolio to some third-party advisor is a responsibility. We've seen folks do both. If you have very large amount of wealth, at some point people choose to call Goldman Sachs and say, here is my $200 million, manage it for me. But for folks with high net worth, anywhere between, this is my two cents, from a few million dollars, somewhere maybe up to $50 million. There's no right or wrong number. I don't know what's a golden number, but somewhere in that range. A lot of people take their own control, and it is the best practice to be sort of CEO of your own money until maybe you reach a point where you can actually have a trusted advisor or trusted friend or a leader or someone who can do it for you. But at the same time, you still have to pick and choose what you want to do and understand the risks and rewards. One of the things I've seen, and I'll shut up in a second, is okay, that folks don't often understand risks. They just look at the top line. And this is one of the biggest concerns that I have with syndications and funds too. There are funds, there are growth funds, aggressive strategy funds, and there are conservative funds. And same thing happens with syndications. And there are periods of time when the market corrects. We're seeing it now. A lot of syndications that have been invested into in 21 and 22, they are equity checks are sitting on thin ice. So I just wanted to add this comment that syndications is a vehicle. Timing and strategy and understanding risk are all part of the overall equation. Anyway, how would folks reach out to you if they'd like to get your expert opinion, want to get involved with coaching, consulting, et cetera? What's the best way to reach out?
So I am, my very simple, Christina Suter. So Christina, Christina Suter is Suter, one T, at, you know, at .com, ChristinaSuter.com. Pretty straight up. You can find me on a lot of social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on YouTube. I have my own podcast is on YouTube under christinasuter.com. My Phoebe meeting, my real estate meeting, we have over 5 years worth of videos from the Phoebe meeting on YouTube as well. Roku TV, Amazon TV. So you can find me on a lot of different platforms. I'm a great believer in education, a huge believer in education and networking being what you need to be successful. And education is what I really hope to give to people as a way of sort of giving back. Also, straight up, my phone number, 310-463-5942. That's 310-463-5942. And I give out my phone number almost every podcast. And the funnest call I ever got was from somebody in Spain who owned buildings in New Jersey. And I really loved working with him. It was great. I'm like, yep, I understand the US market. I've invested in multiple different coasts, including Virginia. I can do New Jersey, not a problem. So I give out my phone number directly because if people want to have a conversation that is about their portfolio and they know it's safe and they know we can truly come up with a plan, whether it's a small portfolio or a big portfolio, that's one of my joys.
Well, thank you for sharing. Thank you for the courage to share your personal cell phone number. You might get some marketing phone calls. I'll try to sell you something
Yeah,
with
it's all right.
right. In this day and age, you get all kinds of interesting calls. So thank you for coming on a podcast. It was a true pleasure to have you. Appreciate you. We'll do another episode in a little bit, and I was delighted and happy to be a guest on your podcast. So until the next time.
Thank you, Mike. Until the next time.
Thank you, Christina.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.